coming up next on Lutheran Radio UK.
Worth doing badly.
Thank you for listening to Lutheran Radio UK, the internet radio of the Evangelical Lutheran Church of England. I'm your host, Jamie Krieger. I am pastor of Resurrection Lutheran Church in Cambridge. At Resurrection, we have adult Bible study at 10 a.m. every Sunday while the children are in Sunday school. At 11 a.m., we gather for the Divine Service with Holy Communion. For more information about our congregation, go to resurrectionlutheran.org.uk. I'm also pastor of the Oxford Lutheran Mission. Pastor Tapani Simeoki and myself take turns to meet with the congregation there at 4:30 in the afternoon at St. Michael's and All Angels every second and fourth Sunday of the month. For more information about this, go to oxfordlutheran.co.uk. If you are nowhere near these congregations, go to lutheran.co.uk. This is the website of the Evangelical Lutheran Church of England, and it has information about all our congregations in England, Wales, and Scotland. I am also manager of Lutheran Radio UK. I hope you enjoy listening to our programs as much as we enjoy producing them for you. Find our entire schedule and the podcasts of all our programs at lutheranradio.co.uk. On today's episode of Worth Doing Badly, we will be looking at the lessons for the 12th Sunday after Pentecost, and the readings are from Isaiah chapter 51, verses 1 through 6, the Psalm is 138, the Epistle lesson is selected verses from Romans 11, and the Gospel lesson is from Matthew chapter 16, verses 13 through 20. David, welcome back. Let's begin with Matthew 16.
Jesus tells the disciples, the gates of hell shall not prevail against them. The imagery is striking. The disciples imagined that Jesus was giving them unheard of powers over physical and metaphysical enemies. And they were repeatedly disappointed that Jesus did not give them this obvious power, but rather in this case, he gives them the keys to the kingdom of heaven. A key is unimpressive. Its power is not in what it is, it's in what it does, in opening the door that is shut. And if the door that shuts us off from the life that we desire are the gates of hell, having the key to that door is the single most important possession that we could have. If those gates are forever shut, Dante understood, then hope is forever lost. But if the gates of hell can actually be opened, then the key is the most important thing that any human being can possess. And this is the key that Jesus gives to the disciples. The gates of hell are not opened by having the power to knock them down. They are open by knocking and having someone on the other side being willing to open that gate. The disciples wanted the power to storm the gates of hell. Jesus gave them a key to open the gates. And that key represented the freedom to be able to have the life that we desire. Everything depends upon this unimpressive key. Because the kingdom of heaven, which is the life that we desire, does not come by force. It doesn't come by power. It is a promise of passage to freedom. It is the loosening that all who are bound up desire. So the key is, in fact, the key to the life of faith, knowing that the one thing that stands between us and the fulfillment of our desire has been overcome, not by power, but by this key. The psalmist says, that having this key allows us a sense of defiance. I hymn to you in defiant presence before all those deities that people imagine to be real gods, says the psalm. Singing hymns as an act of defiance is a new thought for me. For the psalmist, the hymn expresses a rebellious confidence in the truth that the Lord on high intends to lift up the lowly to himself. Probably, in my mind, the most defiant hymn is Mary's Magnificat, which best expresses her faith's defiance, that with Jesus somehow the lowly would be uplifted and the lofty would be humbled. The coming of Jesus would change the whole structure of the world. So the psalmist has confidence, not because of what he has, but because of what he knows and who he knows. He has confidence because he understands a truth that others overlook and undervalue. God does not let go of his handiwork. If we are God's handiwork, God will not abandon us, because he cannot abandon what he has made. And not even the gates of hell can overcome that particular truth. And the one thing that we desire as God's handiwork is for God to rescue us. And God does not rescue us with his power, he rescues us with his love. So all of the impressive assets that the mighty have are utterly useless. All of the things that we think give us confidence have no bearing at all if we do not have the key that opens up the gates of hell. Placed side by side with worldly wealth, a key looks unimpressive until the very moment that you are up against the gates of hell, that they impede your progress to the desired end. At that moment, then the most insignificant thing, this key, proves to be the most important thing, the one thing needful for life. And so the psalmist sings a hymn defiantly because he has this confidence that not height nor depth nor powers or anything else in this world can separate him from the love of God. So he sings his defiant hymn. Now we go to Isaiah. And Isaiah talks about this confidence that we have in this key to the kingdom, where he says, he was the one whom I summoned and I blessed. So Isaiah says, where do we see this confidence at work? Where do we see this faith? And he says, look to the rock from which you were hewn. And he's not talking about God. He is talking about Abraham and Sarah, who were the exemplars of faith. Now here I want to point out that the word confidence is actually a word that's built on the word fides or faith. Confidence means together, and the fidence is from fides, which just means confidence is an aspect of faith. It's an understanding that somehow in the present, even though it doesn't appear that you have this particular asset, it's a confidence that in the future, this key will actually prove to be the thing that we need, this faith. So, and if you're familiar with the details of the story of Abraham and Sarah, we oftentimes jump to the end of Abraham's glorious willingness to sacrifice Isaac, which is a bit strange. The story of Abraham and Sarah is filled with troughs and peaks, but mostly troughs of how their belief waxes and wanes because God's salvation unfolds so slowly. And Isaiah says, look to them if you want to know what it means to be confident. And there you see that their confidence was not in themselves. In themselves, they were had repeated failures. Their confidence was that they were absolutely convinced that God had summoned them, and that if God had summoned them, God would somehow bless them. The first part they were sure of, that was in a historical event where God called them. The second part, well, if you read the story, you recognize that they're not quite sure whether God will bless them or how God will bless them. And yet Isaiah says, this is what it means to live in this world with the keys to the kingdom. So waiting for God to bless them was difficult to the extreme for them, and it will be difficult to the extreme for us. And yet they remain confident that God had, in fact, summoned them. We talk about frequently, we're talking about that we look to our baptism, the historical event in which we were summoned and called by God. And with that then comes the confidence that God will somehow bless us with the keys to this kingdom. The low part of confidence in God was when Abraham was summoned to sacrifice Isaac. For Abraham, salvation and sacrifice seem to be mutually exclusive things. We have the advantage of history. We can look back now on how the sacrifice and salvation became one in the same thing, finally in culminating in the cross of Jesus. Now, Isaiah has this really interesting passage. It says, "For teaching from me shall go out." So in other words, our first contact with this confidence comes to us not in power, but in this teaching, in this the word that comes to us to help us understand how God works, and that this teaching will give us confidence that my triumph draws near, my rescue comes forth. It is through this ongoing teaching that we have this confidence that that this is the way of God and that this can be trusted. So we took to Romans and say, what would it be like to live with that kind of confidence? What does Paul tell us about having this kind of faith? Now, this is a lovely passage, and to take one part of the passage and to focus on it distorts the whole passage. Nevertheless, that's kind of the challenge of preaching, is that you can't say everything. And so in order to make one point, which is what a sermon ought to do, you have to select. And so from this Romans passage, even though there are many things that could be focused on, the one part that captures my attention is that Paul says, present your bodies as a living sacrifice, which is your spiritual worship. So Paul says here that if you possess the keys of the kingdom and you have confidence that your rescue is at hand, you will have a different view of the physical body. You will see your physical body in a different way than the person who doesn't have the keys to this kingdom. You will have a confidence about how your body is to be used because you will see it as a place of sacrifice. See, under the best conditions, the body will not last. The body always dies. So the question is, will the body die in service of selfishness, or will the body die in service of sacrifice for others? And Paul says it's much more glorious to think of your body, which is going to end up dead anyway, being one of sacrifice. Now, but Paul does something very interesting. A sacrifice is something which is killed. But for Paul, his confidence is that you present your body as a living sacrifice. So in other words, this is not a sacrifice that dies. This is a sacrifice that kills. This is a sacrifice that enlivens us. It makes life worth the living. So sacrifice is not a way of dying. It's a superior way of living with the confidence, because now you are living without fear of death. And with that confidence of having the keys to life, Paul says, you want to know how you have that confidence? The world wants to conform you to it. Everybody would like to conform you to something. Paul says, do not be conformed to the world. The world is dying. Why would you want to be conformed to something which has no future? Rather, he says, be transformed. Let God's teaching through inner renewal give you a different way of looking at yourself, looking at the world, and looking at God. Rather than living in fear, live in this confidence that you have been summoned, and God always blesses those whom he summons. And so Paul says, this is the what it means to live in this world. You, on an ongoing basis, through good and ill, through the things that hurt us, that they won't harm us, you will discern what the will of God is. And that when you see the world from this perspective, you will see that your life is good and acceptable and on its way to perfection. All of this coming back then to Jesus telling his disciples, as I said earlier, that they were going to receive the keys to the kingdom. And the disciples repeatedly are disappointed that he gave them a key when in fact that seemed unimpressive, until the very moment in which you have to draw on that key to open up the gates of hell.
Thank you once again, David. This is as much as we can do today. I pray this has been very useful to our listeners. Just reminding our listeners that the podcasts of this program, Worth Doing Badly, are available online on our website, lutheranradio.co.uk. Try our app for mobile phones. Go to the App Store or Google Play and download the one that is right for you to listen to us on the go. David, once again, thank you very much. We'll talk again next week.
Thank you.